Desk 6. This is Brian Gall back at the Sports Desk to bring you all the latest news, both local and national. And first off, it seems that the Stourbridge soccer team, the Glass Boys, have bounced back untroubled by their exit from the FA Cup at the hands of Wycombe Wanderers 10 days ago. Since then, they've defeated Barwell 2-0 in the League Cup competition, then on Saturday recorded an overwhelming 4-0 away win at Skelmersdale in the league. I remarked last week that their main objective now will be to earn promotion at the end of the season. They were lying in 11th place in the league table then. Now they're up to 7th and still have all those games in hand on the sides higher up. Glass Boys blitzed their opponents with 4 first-half goals on Saturday, then took it easy after the break while never letting go their grip on the match. The goal rush started after 20 minutes thanks to a rasping 25-yard shot from Christian Green that left the Skelmersdale keeper helpless. Luke Benbow, who appears on Stourbridge's score sheet so often, added their second from a corner. The third strike came when a Skelmersdale defender deflected a harmless shot past his own goalkeeper and late drove home a powerful header for the fourth, all these strikes coming in less than 20 minutes. Stourbridge thought they'd scored a fifth before the interval, but that was ruled out by the referee for a foul. With their goalkeeper largely a spectator, Glass Boys cruised through the second half, keeping their powder dry for Tuesday evening's away match at Michelover Sports, who are likely to prove four more formidable opponents. Stourbridge Rugby were also away from home on Saturday with a trip to Scunthorpe, who are a new team in Division 2 North this season. Stourbridge had enjoyed a strong win against them when Scunthorpe visited Stourton Park last autumn, and with time running out this season, if they're to have any hope of featuring even in the promotion playoffs, Stourbridge needed to achieve something similar on Saturday's visit to Lincolnshire. According to reports, this was definitely a game of two halves. Stourbridge, discombobulated during the first, much improved in the second. There were missed opportunities to score, although Stourbridge did manage one first half try, but ended trailing by 10 points to 7 when the half-time whistle blew. Whatever was in the half-time cup of tea seemed to work, for the visitors had their second try shortly after, thanks to good work by a revived front five forward lineup. Those forwards were wreaking havoc with the Stourbridge defence by now, and sustained pressure eventually persuaded the referee to award Stourbridge a penalty try. The visitors' fourth try, which earned them a bonus point, came from a defensive scrum near their own line and a sprint the length of the field to touch down at the other end. A good outcome at the finish, and the team are now up to third in the league table after a result elsewhere also went their way. In the run-up to Christmas, we had also been following the progress of the Stourbridge Lions Rugby Club. That's the amateur team who share the facilities at Stourton Park and play their rugby in the Midlands 2 West North League. At that time, they had been going very well, winning week after week and leading the divisional league standings, and I'm pleased to say they are still top of the tree, despite having had a rocky passage recently. They had only two league fixtures back in December and lost them both, by 10 points to 11 at home to one of their promotion challengers, Kidderminster, then a shocking 27-0 thrashing away to Leek, another of the chasing sides. Results elsewhere among the chasing teams in the league table enabled Lions to keep their heads just above the chasing pack, and on Saturday they began 2017 with a resounding 41 points to 17 bonus point win against Old Salt Leans. They really can't afford any more slip-ups as the season heads for its climax. You may also remember that through the autumn and early winter I regularly reported on Dudley Kings Winford Rugby Club. Along with their own supporters, I was concerned at their continued presence in the Midlands 1 West League after a season littered with defeats. But then they suddenly turned a corner with a storming home win against Kenilworth early in November, and it was just like dark clouds lifting as they went on a 7-match winning streak, which only ended on Saturday when they tasted defeat, and it was a heavy one, going down by 32 points to 7 at Bourneville. Even so, DK are currently fourth in the league table, although too far behind the league leaders, one would think, to have any prospect of featuring in promotion at the end of the season. This week sees the very early stages of the Australian Open Tennis, traditionally the first Grand Slam event in the tennis year. As befits his number one world ranking, Andy Murray is the top seed, and he must be hoping he can land the trophy at last. He has been in the final 5 times and lost 4 of them to Novak Djokovic, who is the second seed this year. The other final he lost was to Roger Federer. Andy began his 2017 campaign on Monday, the first day of the tournament, and opened with a straight sets win against the Ukrainian Marchenko. But it was not a performance Andy will want to remember. There's a phrase sports commentators use about winning ugly, and that describes this victory by the Scotsman, who never reached top gear. His service was out of kilter. I've never seen him produce so many double faults. His service return, usually one of his most formidable weapons, was ordinary, and he was generally out of sorts. Let's hope he's just got a poor performance out of his system. In general, the opening stage of the tournament was kind to the British players, although they were not up against any of the top performers. Dan Evans from Birmingham, who last week reached the final of an event in Sydney, a result that lifted him up to number 51 in the world rankings, played really well in achieving a straight sets win against Banjis of Argentina, and he now faces Marin Cilic, previously a Grand Slam winner, in the second round. Kyle Edmund performed even better, winning his first round match against Geraldo of Colombia, also in straight sets. Amongst the ladies, Jo Konta followed up her victory in the Sydney tournament last week with a comprehensive straights win over Flipkins of Belgium, while Heather Watson disposed of the Aussie Sam Stosur, 18th seed in the tournament. After a fairly even exchange in the first two sets, Watson ran away with the match, winning the final set 6-love. The only casualties from a British viewpoint in the first round were Naomi Brody, who lost a tight three-sets match against Gavrilova, a former Russian who is now an Australian, and Alia Zbedene, who used to be a Slovenian but is now a Brit, who went down in four sets versus his opponent. Both Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal returned to action for the first time in several months, during which they've been recovering from injury, and both are safely through to the second round. I reported last week that England had begun their one-day cricket side's tour of India with a close-fought win in the initial warm-up game, but when it came to the opening international match at Pune on Sunday, it was India who came out on top. It's difficult to pin any blame on the England team for this loss. There was no batting collapse, no total failures among the bowlers. No, the defeat was really down to the genius of the Indian skipper Virat Kohli, who offered a batting masterclass in guiding his side home. England batted first, and although there was no outstanding innings, almost everyone contributed to a total of 350 for 7 from the 50 overs. This total was assisted mightily by no fewer than 108 runs achieved in the final 8 overs. Joe Root with 78 runs and Jason Roy with 73 were the top scorers, but perhaps most applause should go to Ben Stokes, whose 62 runs made up a large part of that 108 runs at the end. 350 is a big total in a 50-over match, and it must have looked to the England team that it was going to be a winning one when they reduced India to 63 for 4 in reply. But that was when Kohli and his batting partner Jadhav took a hand. Those two put on exactly 200 runs together for the fifth wicket, both making hundreds, and by that stage they'd batted England right out of the match. It was left to Pandeya, a lower-order batsman, and his colleagues to gently take singles all round the wicket and guide India to a winning total, which they achieved with a couple of overs to spare. The second of the three matches in this one-day series, to be played at Cuttack, is due tomorrow, Thursday, and I hope to bring you a report next week. I can't claim to know much about sailing. Martin, our engineer here at the Talking News, is your man for that. But I must admit I've become increasingly gripped by a round-the-world yacht race that's expected to finish on Thursday. This is the Vendée Globe event, which takes place about every 4 years and is simply a race for single-handed yachts that set off from the Atlantic coast of France, circumnavigate the world and return. These vessels bear little resemblance to the craft you might see tied up at Abu Dhabi. They're ultra-equipped, made of carbon fibre and cost several million pounds to build. How sophisticated they are can be shown by the fact that they can go right around the world relying on the wind alone in about 11 weeks. Anyway, the reason I'm gripped this time is that after all those miles, after storms, huge waves and even the occasional flat calm, there are two craft battling it out to reach the finish line, and even with no more than about 48 hours to go as I write this, who will win is still open to question. Leading the way is the Frenchman Armel Leclerc, but right on his tail is a Welshman, Alex Thompson, gaining all the time, but maybe running short of miles to win. Thompson on Tuesday was still about 70 miles behind, with only about 800 miles to go to the finish. Thompson's yacht broke a world record for the distance travelled over a 24-hour period last Sunday and Monday, covering 537 miles in that time. That's an average of around 25 miles an hour, just relying on the wind. When the race started last November, he took an early lead but was overtaken by the Frenchman when his yacht was damaged, and indeed, when they passed Cape Horn, Thompson was still about 1,000 miles behind, but he's rocketed up the Atlantic like a man possessed. In his radio messages, he says he hardly has any time to sleep, just living on adrenaline, hoping the wind keeps up. The other yachts are nowhere in this race to the finish. Indeed, some of them have not even reached the Atlantic yet. Well, I'm all behind as well, so that's all the sporting news we've got time for this week. I'll be back next time with the latest, but until then, it's goodbye from Brian Gall.